You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science today, we're joined by our expert, Dr. Kushla McGovern. Kushla, how are we today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Nice and wet, gloomy day, telling us that actually maybe the Auckland weather will decide it's no longer summertime. I'm quite excited, but I've been told that I'm weird about liking cold weather.
You're in the minority there, I think.
Yeah. but anyway, what have you got for us today?
So today we're going to talk about a little bit about Artemis II, because that's got to be on everyone's mind at the moment, and a little bit about forever chemicals and bacteria.
That one sounds honestly terrifying, but I mean, we'll find out.
Artemis II, we'll have a chat about that first.
Yeah.
Just because it has come out of one, it's only just come out of one of its major milestones of the mission, which was it was going to go for the astronauts on the, or the crew on the Artemis II were going to be out of communication for 40 minutes because they're going around the moon, right? And they've just come out of that. And so far, so good. Everything's going well. And so that's really exciting. So for anyone who isn't aware, Artemis II launched last week around about lunchtime Thursday here. So I can tell you there were a lot of excited people in the physics department.
I can imagine.
Working hard while viewing Artemis II launch, which was quite spectacular to watch. So if you haven't checked it out, go to YouTube and have a look at it. It's really quite impressive. And the whole purpose of this mission is basically NASA's trying to reestablish a moon program, basically putting people on the moon again. And so Artemis 1 was a mission that sent this rocket up or this craft up, but it had no crew on it. And so this is the first one that's crewed. So there's four astronauts on it who are spending 10 days in space, and they basically have this really cool sort of trajectory, which is called a free return trajectory. So when they left Earth, they're kind of pointed in a direction that's not pointed to where they'll look at the moon. Because if you're thinking about orbits and travel times and all this, it takes a lot of math to figure out where this thing's got to go and how it's got to travel. So you can actually see online pictures of the path that it has taken and that it will take to get back to Earth. And it's quite an impressive amount of math that's probably gone into doing that. And what's really impressive about this as well is that they will reach these will be the humans that have gone the furthest from Earth ever. So they're going, I think they've just hit their furthest point, and that was about 400,000 kilometres. So no one's been, like the previous records from the 1970s in Apollo 13. So it's been a while since we've been doing any of this sort of exploration.
That's the thing that really gets me with this one, is it's like, I feel like as a kid, I was always like, oh yeah, you know, we went to space, we went to all of these places, and it's like, well, actually, you know, you think about it, 400 kilometers isn't the most, right? But it's so weird, and like, oh, I don't know, it's amazing.
Yeah, sorry, 400,000.
Oh, 400,000, sorry.
You think about it. Yeah, but think about your phone that you have in your hand that you use every day. And I think there's something, I don't remember the exact fact, but the computing power on your phone is pretty similar or is a reasonable proportion of the computing power they had back then to make these Apollo missions work. I just struggle with that concept in my mind. Like, what have we been doing as a society? You know, we got to the moon and then we went, okay, yeah, check that box off. We didn't do any more, and it's a little bit disappointing, but, you know, we're starting to look at it. You know, these missions represent us reinitiating this sort of research, which, you know, it does, you know, there is the kind of, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of work, but it's that global collaboration and that science that comes out of it that's just so amazing. So, you know, like, these crew, they are going to see with their eyes some parts of the moon that we've just never seen before. Like, we've got photos and stuff, but they're actually looking at it. And as there's a quote from the lead scientist of the Artemis missions, Kelsey Young, where she's like, the human eye is basically the best camera that could ever or will ever exist. The number of receptors in the human eye far outweighs what a camera is able to do. So they're kind of just making the point that, you know, actually being able to see this stuff is just so much more than what we get from just photos and imagery alone. Such that they've actually, so they're going to spend like 6 hours documenting and analysing the lunar surface. So that's what they're kind of into at the moment. They're going to see a solar eclipse. They've seen two new craters, and so they've proposed to name these two new craters Integrity, which is the nickname for their spacecraft, and the other one they're naming Carol, which is actually after the mission commander's wife who died of cancer. So it was quite sweet and led to quite an emotional moment in the mission control, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then, so, and basically what they're doing is, you know, like this mission, they're not landing. That would be future missions, but this is just to test that space launch system rocket. So if you've heard mention of the SLS, that's just the system to propel them out of the atmosphere, that rocket. They're also testing the life support system. So this is, you know, making sure that there's these systems work and that any future missions won't run into issues. So this is a very brave crew of people that have gone up. They are having a little bit of issues with the toilet, it turns out. So they've had to adapt, but they had backup plans in place. Some of the cool science that's going on the mission is there's something called the Archer payload. So this is the Artemis Research for Crew Health and Readiness. So basically the crew, before they've gone up, while they're up there, and after they come back, they're wearing devices to track their movement and their sleep, to monitor their sleep, and it's basically to study how their health and behaviour is affected by being up in space for 10 days. They're also basically taking samples of their saliva, again, before, during, and after. To what the scientists are going to do with that is they're basically looking for immunity biomarkers because they want to better understand how space travel affects our immune system, because once you're in space, you don't have the atmosphere that's blocking out of a lot of solar radiation. And so what effect does this have? There's also a device where it's been on the International Space Station, but they've sent one up on this mission called an Avatar, which is a virtual astronaut tissue analog response. So basically it mimics individual organs and gives scientists material to study, again, analysing what does space travel do to our bodies and how does it affect us? And so when they come back, I couldn't even fathom to think how many years worth of data there is to analyse from this 10 days trip, but I imagine it will be a lot.
Yeah, that's a, I can imagine a lot of, you know, first time back, right? Everything. And yeah. It's a very exciting time. I don't know. Yeah. A lot of, hopefully some cool stuff comes.
Yeah, well, because again, if you compare it to like the 1970s and when people went up, like just in terms of science and what we can analyze now is so much different. So, you know, like whatever they do with the saliva, I imagine some of the methods that they used to study this weren't even conceived of back in the 1970s. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, wonderful time. Wow. You know, sometimes there's things that's a wonderful time to be alive, but it's very exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I mean,
what?
Sorry, I was just going to make the point though. It isn't all over for these. Like, they've got to come back, and I did read this fact, which scared me somewhat. But they've thought about this, and that when they re-enter Earth's atmosphere, the outer shell, the outer ceramics of their craft will get to about 2,700 degrees Celsius. It gets hot. So there's still a lot of tense times for that, those people involved with the mission before this thing, their crew gets back safe and sound.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is that, you know, everything that I know about re-entry, which is very little, but, you know, it gets hot. It doesn't seem fun at all, and it is terrifying. So, you know, good luck.
Yeah, no, it is really terrifying. But they, that's where we've, you know, human society, again, has benefited from a lot of the space research that went on in the 1970s and stuff, from the materials that they developed to resist these heats in the air. So, yeah, we'll see in a few days' time.
Yeah. And moving on, what have you got about bacteria?
Okay, so hopefully everyone's heard about PFAS, or forever chemicals. Now, these are officially they're polyfluoral alkyl substrates, or these are chemicals that get used in things like rainproof gear or firefighting foam, Teflon. They're really those chemicals that are water and grease repellent. So we've used them a lot in things that we use that we want to not get saturated, that we want to clean easily and this sort of thing. But what we've discovered about these chemicals is that some of them actually have some pretty serious human health effects if they accumulate in their bodies, and they can cause things like cancer. The other downside of these chemicals is that they don't break down quickly in the environment, because part of the reason that they're so good for us to use is that, you know, you can coat your jacket with these chemicals and it stays water repellent for a very long time because they don't break down. This has led to them accumulating in the environment, and so now there's a lot of effort trying to figure out how to get rid of them. How do we get these get rid of these things from the soil and the areas where, you know, firefighting foam has been used a lot, or like dumps and this sort of thing. So what these scientists did, and I'm not sure why they went down this road. I haven't actually seen what their motivation was, but they had they basically fed some bacteria some of these PFAS chemicals to see if they would incorporate them into themselves, and they did. So it was just a strain of a bacterium that's in the genus Pseudomonas. So that's a pretty common sort of genus. And it incorporated those PFAS chemicals of a type called polyfluoral alkyl carboxylate into its lipid membrane. So they have, they're basically the outer shell of bacteria is a lipid membrane, and it's incorporated those into that. Why it's done that, it's not really clear. This paper is basically just saying it did it. And then they looked at some other types of bacteria, like good old E. coli, which we hear of a lot, and some other sort of species, and they were also incorporating these polyfluoral alkyl carboxylates, maybe not to the same degree, but they were incorporating them. And so this paper was making the point that there's a lot of attention on how the PFAS affects human and environmental health, but we don't actually really understand a lot about how they interact with living systems. So maybe that actually was just their motivation, where they started with bacteria because they're pretty easy to control in the lab in some sense. And so it kind of opens up a lot of area for study in terms of why does the bacteria incorporate these? Mm. What does it mean for the bacteria's life cycle? Can we use bacteria to maybe break up these chemicals into something that's more manageable and that we can deal with more easily in the future?
I have to imagine that's the goal, right? Because, well, I mean, maybe not the goal, but bacteria are amazing at breaking things down. So if we can find a way for that to work, go
exactly.
us.
That's it exactly. Like, we're always, bacteria and the area of bioremediation, where you use bacteria or plants or things to basically clean up the environment, is a massive area of research. And so I think we'll start seeing more of bacteria and PFAS.
Mm. Well, thank you very much. Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kushla, for joining us. Thank you, MOTAT. And thank you, science. Journey into MOTAT on Sunday, 19th April, and spend the day amongst the grass, soil, and garden with Live Day Farming.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.